This is the Navigating Adult ADHD podcast, here to help you navigate and thrive with ADHD in adulthood. I'm your host, Zena, and I was diagnosed at age 36. As with many ADHDers, I have a rebellious and nonconformist style. And that means that there will likely be swearing in the coming episode. Please be mindful of any little people. Welcome back to the Navigating Adult ADHD podcast, where I am so excited that we have our very first guest on the podcast, one of my closest friends, one of the most amazing coaches I know, and I have nicknamed her the Compassion Queen. Because I think when we talk about all things compassion, especially self-compassion as well, that is her superpower. So this is Rebecca Stark. Welcome to the podcast.
I'm so excited to be here. I'm so excited to be the first guest on your podcast. I feel very honored. Thank you, my friend.
Oh, I'm so happy it is you. And this is going to be so fun. And I know, although we're going to talk mostly, I think, about self-compassion, I know this conversation, because we both have ADHD, is going to go in all sorts of directions and down many rabbit holes, which will be super fun.
It should be quite the ride.
Yes, it will. So let's start out with talking about what self-compassion is. I'm keen to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, self-compassion. Something I've come to believe is one of the most powerful and most transformative things we can practice. And I'm so glad you're doing this podcast because I think self-compassion gets misunderstood a lot. Mm. So when I talk about self-compassion and practice it with myself and teach my clients how to do it, self-compassion is literally deep intimacy with yourself is how I term it. And it's moving from judgment into curiosity and compassion and really building a deep understanding for who you are, why you do the things you do, how you process information, and so that you can, you know learn how to help yourself and learn how to heal and learn how to support yourself. And I love one time I heard the root word of compassion, the root compassion means being with or suffering with, really, but being with. And so when I think of self-compassion, I think of it as being intimately present with yourself, no matter what you're feeling, especially when you're feeling the hard things like pain or, you know, suffering. Like, it's like really not abandoning yourself in those moments. And
also I want to add to that, like, not trying to necessarily make it better or, you know, kind of make it go away quickly. Like, when you say being with, I love that, because I think of, you know, let's just imagine you're like sitting with one of your good friends and they're grieving the loss of somebody that they love. Like, you're literally just being with them.
Offering
them love and compassion, and you're not trying to make it, you know, better or go away. It's just allowing them to experience their grief and know that you're there for them no matter what. Like, that's the image that comes to mind for me.
That's so beautiful. And it actually takes a lot of courage. And I think of someone, they're grieving. I think of someone, if you have a friend who's dying of cancer, like a compassionate thing to do would be to be with them in their fear and their sadness, and you can't make it better, right?
Yeah,
but compassion is being willing to be with.
And when you say like it takes courage, I think like just acknowledging that courage doesn't always feel good. Like, it feels hard or uncomfortable when you are couraging when you're in it, because I think of, you know, when you're sitting with that friend, and I've been that person, you sit with a friend and they've just lost their brother to suicide, for example. And you want them to feel better. You want them to not be so upset and not be in so much pain. Of course, like we want them to feel better.
Yeah.
But, you know, sitting in that discomfort in that hardness with them and allowing them just to grieve and cry and share memories and what have you, like, that does feel hard, that does feel uncomfortable, and it's also okay. And it's about, I think, applying that to ourselves. Like, we're so quick to try and make ourselves feel better or think that we should feel better.
Yeah.
And sometimes compassion is just like allowing ourselves to feel the shit and be in whatever it is.
So true. And I think about having been on the receiving end when I'm in a really dark place and someone's trying to make it go away or trying to fix it or trying to make it better. Sometimes we need that, but sometimes that can feel so dismissive and make you almost feel ashamed of where you're at.
Yeah.
Versus someone who's showing you true compassion isn't trying to rush you out of that space, isn't trying to make it better for you. There's like, I'm with you in this. I'm going to scroll through your eyes for a little bit and I'm going to help you in this space. And it's hard to do that for ourselves because we so many tactics for getting away from the things that are hard and the things that are painful.
Yeah. So let's talk about that, because I think, as you know, people with ADHD, we are really good at being compassionate with others. Like, that's one of our strengths or our superpowers, is like, we are very empathetic. We relate to other people and often share stories to be able to connect with them. So we are naturally very compassionate. However, you know, we often really struggle, and I speak from experience, like struggle to be compassionate with ourselves. Like, why is that? And I know this is something I think all humans, you know, struggle with, but why is that, do you reckon? What do you think?
That is the question, right? Because self-compassion is something we actually have to learn and teach ourselves how to practice. It's not hard to necessarily to practice compassion for other humans. That kind of comes natural for a lot of us. But to turn that towards ourselves, for one, I think, like we've talked about before, there's that deep fear that if I'm compassionate with myself, then I'm being too easy on myself. I won't change. I'm letting myself. We've both heard our clients say this, like, off the hook. I think there's this fear. One, I think it's hard for us to receive it from ourselves. It's just hard to be loving towards ourselves. I mean, we know just even our inner voice is so critical. And two, I don't think we're taught how to do it. And it doesn't come natural. You would think it comes natural, but I don't think it comes natural. And I'm not sure why, but I think a lot of people are afraid to be compassionate towards themselves because they don't trust themselves to change or grow or meet their goals or push themselves.
Unless they're beating themselves
really hard.
And I also think, like, an element of it for, you know, us ADHDers is the amount of negative feedback and criticism that we have heard throughout our lives, especially prior to getting diagnosed. You know, like, you should be on time. You should be able to figure out how long that's going to take you. You should, you know, be able to study for that. Like, what's wrong with you? Haven't you got, you know, a schedule? Haven't you got a calendar? Like, you know, you know, I've talked about it many times on the podcast, but like, by age 10, a child with ADHD has heard 20,000 more criticisms than their peers. Like, you know, imagine that. Like, the average age for a woman to be diagnosed with ADHD is like late 30s, whereas for a boy or a male, it is age 7, right? There's a 30 plus year age gap. So imagine that, you know, 20,000 criticisms compounded over the lifetime of a female, for example. Like, I think that we internalize all of that. I should be able to do that. I should be better. I should, what's wrong with me? Like, why can't I do that? I think we internalize so much of that. I think that's a part of it, as well as, like, you know, like, our primitive brain can be a bit of an asshole, the negativity bias and all of that. But I also think a lot of it is, like, we grow up seeing our parents being really hard on themselves, or, you know, people around us. Like, we don't, like, I can't think of a single person I ever observed in my life when I was growing up who displayed compassion towards themselves.
Yeah. I think there's a, you know, it comes from lots of things too, but the patriarchal lineage we have too of, like, being sacrificial and, like, flagellating yourself and you know, basically hating your flesh and trying to overcome who you are. And I think that that narrative plays into it too. I think there's so many different ways it's programmed into us. Mm-hmm. And to your point too, I think the social aspect of our brain is constantly looking for ways we don't fit in.
Yeah.
In order to try to be part of the tribe, right? And when you grow up with ADHD, there's a lot of ways you're different than the people around you and not as good as, and you don't get the positive rewards and the positive feedback in academia. And in a lot of ways that might cultivate some of that, you know, maybe I'm not a shit human, you know, maybe there are parts of me better.
Maybe I'm actually doing really well in a lot of different ways. Like, Wow. Okay. Well, before we talk about like how we can be compassionate, which I definitely want us to do, but tell us a little bit about your ADHD journey, your diagnosis, like whatever you want to share.
So obviously like growing up, that wasn't even on my radar. Kids weren't really getting diagnosed with it. And especially not girls. And I didn't present as hyperactive. You know, I was actually a pretty fucking smart kid and learned how to cope really early. And learned how to fit in, learned how to adapt. And so I did okay in school, but I had no executive functioning skills. I knew something didn't work right with my brain, but I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And I would just tell people like something's just off with the way that I can't sit here and read this and like distill the information. Like something was just off. And I just thought I was distracted and, you know, like wasn't eating right and all these things. And I even, when I went to college, I dropped out because I couldn't finish it because I was just lost. And, you know, you can get by in high school with just kind of, you know, showing up and cramming last minute, but I literally couldn't study and didn't know how and couldn't. I look back on myself with a lot of compassion, but at the time I just felt like, am I an idiot? I had two brothers who really excelled academically, and I would compare myself to them and think, they got all the good genes. I'm just like the head in the clouds. My parents just thought, oh, she's just, you know, so sweet and so, you know. And I was so frustrated because I knew I was smarter than I was able to show.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. Like, I just felt like there was just this like grid of something that was blocking what I knew I was capable of with what I was actually on the outside capable of like putting together. And I was so frustrated because I knew I was smarter than I felt.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was just like low self-esteem. Well, I did have very low self-esteem. I thought I just was lazy.
Yeah.
I just didn't care. Yeah. You know, I partied too much maybe. And even that, like I used, you know, I partied a lot, and looking back, I was trying to self-regulate in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, and I had no idea. And then I see it too. When I was raising my kids, I see it in them. But so when I finally, so I always had jobs after, when I dropped out of college, I dropped out because I got pregnant with my daughter. And so I stayed at home and raised my kids for 15 years. And then when I did go back to work, it was always jobs like a preschool teacher, or I worked with developmentally disabled seniors, and I was always on my feet and always doing like service oriented jobs, which you can easily do with an ADHD brain.
Yeah.
We're actually really good at that. And there was always a lot of movement. I never sat at a desk. And then I was in sales and I did really well in that. And then when I got into a career where I had to sit for hours on end and take notes and do a lot of admin work, I was making crazy, stupid mistakes. I couldn't get dates right. I was so disorganized. I couldn't finish things. And then, you know, thankfully we're being educated now about symptoms of ADHD. And I thought, this makes a lot of sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And sure enough, you know, I got assessed and got a diagnosis and started some treatment, and it was just like night and day. I was like, oh, this is what it's like to have a brain that functions, that can
that can
get
focus.
Things done, that can read an article from start to finish. Like, I had never in my life read something from start to finish and like knew what I read.
Yeah, and remember it, right? Yeah,
remember
to be able to remember. I mean, I can read it, but I don't remember anything.
Yeah. Or like been able to finish things at the end of a day, like been able to finish all these different, like, and I knew, so that's kind of what told me, like, oh, like, I think lots of factors go into what give you that sort of processing, ADHD processing brain, but like seeing the, feeling the difference of having a brain that is, you know, able to process better. It's kind of like, you know, if the medication works, then you know you had the right diagnosis.
Mm. Tell us, and how old were you when you got diagnosed?
This was just like a year and a half ago. So 46.
Yeah.
Oh, my whole life.
Yeah.
And I really, like, I thought something was just deeply wrong with me. And work was so stressful. And I was so panicky all the time and so ashamed. But like how disorganized I was.
Yeah. And everything you're describing, like I 100% relate, right? So much shame and that whole, my whole life just thinking there's something wrong with me. Like I'm different. Like, I'm different to all of these people. I'm so different. Like, I'm different inside. Yeah. Something's wrong with me. Yeah. And just that continuous shame.
Yeah.
And
like, why can't I just make my brain do this?
Yeah. Yeah. And I have like the amount of times I just thought it's just I've got a lack of discipline. Like, why can't I be disciplined like other people?
Yes.
Like, why can't I finish things? Like,
totally. I would think like I just don't have the capacity to do hard things or like, you know, I'm spoiled. Like, I only want to do things that, you know, all the inner. Criticism.
Yeah. And when you were talking about like how smart you were in school and how smart you are, like, I remember I had the opposite experience. I just thought I was really not that smart at all. Me believing and knowing that I am smart has only been recently in the last couple of years. And actually, I think it was probably my partner who started saying, wow, you're really smart. Like, you're really good at this stuff. You're really smart. And one day I was like, yeah. Oh yeah, I am. And it like clicked. Because I think for so many years, because I had challenges with retaining information and learning things and, you know, such negative kind of self-image and self-talk and all of these things, like I didn't believe at all that I was smart. And it was crazy because, like, you know, having been a mindset coach for so many years, I attracted clients who were like rocket scientists and lawyers and, like, you know, all of these high profile jobs. And I was like, whoa. Wow, really? Maybe it's because I explain things so simple. Like, and eventually I was like, oh, maybe it's because I'm smart too. Like, maybe it's because like I can explain things in a way that like appeals to their brain. I don't know, but like, it's possible I'm smart as well.
Love that.
So I wanted to share that because that like, yeah, it kind of blew my mind to have that realization. And I think like all of the women that I have coached with ADHD, so smart. But again, like, yeah, struggled to see that in themselves or acknowledge that in many ways. So let's talk go.
Well, I was just saying, grew up with the complete feeling like if I could just be disciplined and organized, then
yes,
I could actually do something with my life or make something of myself. If then, and so you're always feeling like you just a huge lack.
So let's talk about how we can be compassionate with ourselves. And I love how you talk about it being like a practice. And first of all, we have ADHD, so our practice might be all over the show. It definitely won't be perfect. But like, what does it look like? How can we do it?
Yeah. I think like cultivating mindful awareness is something you must do. And that by that, I mean, we have to start building the muscle and the ability to like slow down ourselves, even for a moment, and just pause and go, wait a minute, what am I thinking right now? What am I feeling? What am I experiencing? And moving from this place of like hyper frantic stress and survival and just getting into pure curiosity. Because compassion to me is that, like, huh, I wonder what is really going on here. I wonder why someone like you would never complete a project. Like, in my mind, my judgment has always been that you're lazy. Compassion is like, let's remove that judgment for a moment and just really get curious and, like, investigate with, you know, openness. Like, if you weren't all these negative things, if we remove the labels, if you weren't lazy, if you weren't an idiot, if you weren't undisciplined, what else might be true here?
Yeah.
And really slowing down and being willing to see yourself through the lens of, like, giving yourself the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I hear you saying, like, first of all, like, notice when maybe you're feeling like crap. So, like, notice that whether you notice you're beating yourself up, or you're just feeling ashamed or guilt or bad or sad or some kind of negative emotion, it's like an invitation to, like, get curious.
Get right, curious.
Like, drop out of judgment and into curiosity. Like, why am I feeling this way? Like, what's going on for me? Like,
yeah,
why am I struggling right now? Like, just asking those kind of questions without the judgment to see what you can learn.
Yeah,
it's like approach it as if it was like one of your best friends, like somebody you love and care about, right? Like, if this was them, how would I, like, question them? What would I say to them? Like, what would I offer them?
Yeah. One of the practices that's been so powerful is, you know, when we talk about learning to just start to build the muscle of self-compassion, build the practice of self-compassion, is just being with. One of the things I take my clients through, and I've been doing for myself, is just noticing, like, when you are feeling anxious, angry, stressed, sad, and pausing and locating it in your body, or locating just a place in your body and just putting your hand over it and just naming, like, I'm feeling so distracted right now, or I'm feeling so overwhelmed right now, or I'm feeling so sad, and just keeping it there. Like, I see it, I acknowledge it, it's okay. Like, it's okay. Like, I don't have to fix this. I don't have to, like, force my way out of it. Like, I'm just slowing down and paying attention, being with.
Yeah.
Feeling really heavy hearted today. Huh. Notice that. Okay.
I love that. Yeah. And one of the things I love to do is, like, when I'm feeling that, like, I try and get skin to skin contact. Like, if I can, like, get under my, like, sweatshirt and, like, literally touch my skin, like, I just feel like it's a little more like, I'm here for you. I got you. It's okay. Like, you're anxious. We're feeling anxious. Okay. That's what we got. We're feeling anxious today. And, like you say, like, even just naming the emotion and just repeating it over and over and not trying to fix it or change it, but just being with it. I still remember the very first time I did this. I think it was like 2014 or something. And I was living in London, because I remember where I was walking, which is so random, but I was, like, walking between my work and the yoga studio. And it was like, I'd heard about, like, just labeling how you were feeling. And it was anxiety at the time. And I was like, the whole walk there, which is like a 30-minute walk, I just kept repeating in my head, I'm feeling anxious. This is anxiety. I'm feeling anxious. And it was amazing to me that by the time I got there, although I still felt anxious, it wasn't worse. If anything, I think the pressure had come out a little bit, because I hadn't been trying to fix it or change it or ignore it. Like, my emo was like, ignore it.
Or judging yourself for it. Like, what is wrong with you? Why are you so anxious? It's just a stupid yoga class. Like, get over it. Yeah. No one else is anxious. It's just, like, it really, and then when you slow down and you really, really investigate and be present with what's really going on for you, that's how you can support yourself and truly help yourself. Like, it's like with the ADHD diagnosis, if you really slow down and go, like, okay, wait a minute. Like, I'm having these struggles in all these different areas of my life. Maybe something else might be going on here.
Yeah.
And then when you slow down and pay attention to yourself and recognize, like, oh my gosh, this is really hard for me. This is really, and I'm tired and scared and overwhelmed. then you're like, something, maybe I should get some support. Maybe I should see a doctor and see if something's going on. Like, maybe I should hire a coach. Like, maybe I should help myself out here. So compassion leads to actual transformation versus if we just stay in that kind of judgment, we just stay in that wheel of effort, effort, failure, failure, failure.
And when we stay in that judgment, like, we continue to beat ourselves up. We're really hard on ourselves. We spend more time in negative emotion. Like, we're feeling crap, and then we're adding more layers to that by beating ourselves up and being hard on ourselves. But like you say, when you can like allow yourself to practice that compassion, that is when, like, you can take action and start to create change to actually, you know, feel better, or, you know, create some positive in that situation, some kind of moving up and out of it, if that makes
up
sense.
Up and out of it. Which I think is such an important piece to, like, to call out, because, you know, I think the resistance to self-compassion is it's just self-indulgence, and it's just like letting yourself off the hook. Like, oh, you just have ADHD. Okay. You know, and then you can be like, no, I can't take on tasks, or I can't, you know, I'm just going to, you know, never do anything. That an illustration I like to use to show the difference is, like, if you're someone who yells at your kids, right? Like, a lot of people are afraid if they're compassionate with themselves, that looks like, oh, you just have a bad temper. Like, you're just someone who, you know, your mom yelled at you and you just have a bad temper. That's all. And like, it stops there. That's like just self-indulgence to me. Like, that's just like pity almost. Whereas compassion is like, wow, you're like, you're really yelling at your kids, and that's really painful for you and for them. So let's look at, like, why do you keep yelling? Like, what's happening in you when you yell? And like, how do we get you the resources and give you the support you need, or like do the work that needs to be done so that you have what you need to not yell anymore. If that makes sense. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, that those two are very different things. It's, self-compassion is not making excuses for yourself or for anyone else. It's not feeling sorry for yourself or anyone else. It's getting intimate with, like, being with.
And I think it's like being honest with yourself. Like, the reason I yelled at my kids is, like, I've got ADHD, and right now, you know, I'm at the time in my cycle where, you know, my estrogen's dropped, my symptoms are ramped up, I'm so frustrated, my fuse is really short. So, you know, I understand right now it's just that time of the month, and I'm struggling to regulate my emotions and all of that. Like, that's why. Like, I see the reason here. I'm going to be compassionate with myself. And, like, do I want to make some changes? Do I want to ask for some support from my partner? Do I want to, you know, let the kids know what's going on? Like, what do I want to do now? Like, that's kind of how I think about it in this situation. It's like, it's not an excuse. It's like, let's get curious about, like, where this is coming from. What might the root cause be, the reason? And then, like, what are we going to do? How am I going to support myself through that?
Yeah.
One of the questions I love to ask is, like, what is the most loving thing I can do for me right now? Like, it's not, the answer's not going to be beat myself up. It's generally not going to be like, go binge watch like a whole day's worth of Netflix and eat all of the food in the house. Like, I mean, it's going to be like, what is the most loving thing I can do for me? Like, go take a walk and have a break and get some fresh air and just, whatever it is.
So powerful. And you see how, like, that's so much more likely to lead to positive change.
Yes.
And we think it's the opposite. We think if we just beat the shit out of ourselves and shame ourselves, then we won't ever yell at our kids again, you know?
Yeah. If I beat myself up.
We won't binge watch.
And if I beat myself up, I'll be better and do better. I think that that's very much the narrative in our brain, and it just doesn't fucking work. We keep trying.
Keep trying.
But it just doesn't work.
We do. And then we have to develop strategies and methods for escaping the guilt and the shame that we feel for beating ourselves up. So it pulls us further away from ourselves and, like, what's really happening.
Oh, I love this. And So I was telling you the other day how I was with a client, and during the session we were talking about having your own back. And when I said to her, you know, what does it look like to have your own back in this situation? She said to me, let myself off the hook. And I think that's such an interesting thing to explore, because when I think about like having my own back, it's not letting myself off the hook. Like, I think it's not beating myself up.
Right.
But, you know, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that. Like,
yeah.
What do you think?
That's the same thing I hear so often, and why people, again, are afraid to practice it for themselves or think that this is what self-compassion looks like, to like just, yeah, let myself off the hook. And I think that's actually the opposite. I think self-compassion is being willing to actually be present with what this feeling, this behavior, this thought process is creating in your life. And I, you know, I've struggled with finances, and now I know now that's probably managing money and ADHD, impulse control. And, and I had so much shame around that, and I would beat myself up for that so much. And when I was working with a coach, and she was talking, we were talking about my relationship with money and, you know, what would compassion look like? And I'm like, you know, it doesn't feel right to just have compassion for myself, that nobody ever taught me how to manage money. You know, I was never in a situation where those resources were available. And then we're afraid of going into like victim mindset, I think, because I'm like, well, it's nobody else's fault. It's my fault. I should have X, Y, Z. And she said, compassion is just, it doesn't mean you don't make the changes. Compassion is you remove the judgment, because when there's judgment, you can't make changes. You really can't.
Love that. Okay, pause.
That's so, actually my quote, not hers, but.
Oh yeah, this is so good. We got to like, I want to say it back because I don't want to miss it. But like, compassion, okay, say it again. I've lost it already.
Getting compassionate does not mean not changing. So like, compassionate means bringing understanding to. When we're just in judgment of ourselves, we can't make changes. We can't make transformations. If I just judge myself as someone who's shit with money and who's irresponsible with money, that's a judge. That's who I am.
Yeah.
How can I ever become
someone? It
just
ends there, right? And you just stay there. And it just, you just keep throwing shit on it.
Yeah. You're just shit with money.
Yeah.
Versus compassion is, okay. Like, you weren't taught how to manage money throughout your life. You didn't make it a priority. That's hard for you. Like, that's hard. So slow down, learn how to manage money, like make some changes, like really be with how painful and scary it is to not manage your money well. And because I think when we feel, I like to encourage my clients to feel their emotional pain or feel the actual effects of their behavior, because that's when we're moved to change. So when we have compassion for ourselves, like, it is so scary and like hard to feel out of control of your money. And when you really, really feel that, you're like, okay, something needs to change here. Versus judgment is like, yeah, you're just shit with money. And then you go and distract yourself by like,
spending money.
Spending
probably
money
on something you don't need, or food or whatever. Like, yeah.
Yeah. And I think about that, like, when you're really with your suffering or someone else's, you are moved to do something about it.
I love that. And I so agree with that. And I think you've said it so well. Like, when we just continue to judge ourselves for whatever it is, like, you know, how we are with money, you know, the more we do that, the worse we feel, the more we avoid it, or we seek other behaviors to try and feel better and just, you know, bury it, really. Have to be, you know, we have to get curious about why that is, and, you know, drop into that, like, compassion and understanding.
Yeah.
that way we can create positive change. That way we can do something. It's like, you can't create positive change without getting there. And I think like that relates so much to like my journey of like when I discovered that I absolutely hated myself and I was in this deep place of self-loathing. Like I couldn't continue to hate myself and beat myself up to create positive change. I had to get curious about why that was. And, you know, I had to be compassionate with myself. And like, that's some of the most powerful thing work I guess I've ever done on myself, is like practicing compassion and challenging that negative self-talk and that negative self-loathing. Cause that was like that. And it's crazy, cause like I was so overweight at the time and I thought, you know, weight loss was the answer and all of that. And I was trying to beat myself up and force myself to lose weight. But it was when I got, you know, really curious about like why I ate and curious about why I felt this way about myself and why I thought I had to be skinny or I had to look a certain way or why I had to have everyone else's approval. Like from that place of curiosity came the compassion. And then it's crazy. Like I just lost all this weight because I actually wanted to take care of me. Like I wanted to look after this person I was starting to form a positive relationship with. Wild.
You know what's coming to me almost like a visual, like compassion is like the vessel or like the pathway or like almost like a train to like the darkest parts of ourselves, the parts that are in the most pain and creating the most like disruption in our lives and creating the most negative outcomes in our lives. We can't get to those places from a place of judgment because we're just, it's too painful.
And if it's, we believe, it's the same train that takes us to positive change. Like we go
compassion allows you to get close to that dark part of you so that you can understand it.
Yeah.
And when you understand it and you learn to love it, that's when you transform it. Just like what you just, like you got intimate with that part of yourself.
Yeah.
And when you did, like, oh, she's not this horrible.
Yeah.
Personally, she's hurting. She's struggling. What can I do for her? How can I help her?
Yeah. Oh, I love this conversation so much.
I know.
One thing I wanted to talk about is so many women who, you know, reach out to me if they've listened to the podcast or maybe, you know, I meet them and things, they talk about the, like the grieving process and they don't necessarily, it's not necessarily their words, but like they talk about how they wish they'd known sooner or, you know, they feel so bad that they think their life should have been different or if they'd known it would have been different. Like, it's like this grief for what could have been or what should have been that, you know, many women experience when they get diagnosed, especially like, cause we, as women get diagnosed so much later on in life. I want to like talk about how we can add compassion to that because some of those women can be really quite upset and hard on themselves. And often other people as well, there can be sometimes some blame in that, like, you know, the doctor should have known or the, you know, the pediatrician or the teachers or the parents or somebody should have known. Like, what do you think is like, what could we offer those people?
That's a really good question. And I think self-compassion and compassion, and I think that means, that sucks. And that's sad. And that's hard. And it would have, your life may have been different if you'd had support early. It may have taken a different path. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. There's no way to know for sure. But you're having that emotion of anger or loss or grief. And just like, there's some grief there. There's some loss. There's some, you know, wishing, some regret, some wishing things had been different or some feeling maybe the loneliness of having grown up struggling with that and nobody ever slowing down and getting curious. And like that's painful for a moment. But I think if you, when we talk about grief or emotions, like the only way through is through, right?
And I think, I just want to add to what you're saying. Like, I feel like you're saying validate it, like validate your emotions. Like it's okay to grieve. It's okay to be angry. It's okay to like experience regret. I think like that is a normal part of the process for many people who get diagnosed, especially later on in life. Like there is such a mixture of emotions. It's such a mixed bag. Like there's also often a lot of like empowerment and freedom and, oh, it makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. And there's also that side to it as well. Yeah. And that's okay.
That's okay. And then that brings in that acceptance of, and I love Byron Katie, you know, it should have been that way because that's how it was.
Mm-hmm. Like,
it's not going to serve us or help us move forward today if we live in that space of if only.
Yeah. If you're going to keep living there, it's going to stay painful. But now with this new awareness, we have the possibility of making, you know, your future feel different, be different.
What's the most loving thing we can do now?
Yeah. What's the most loving thing you can do for yourself right now? Yeah.
Well, I think about you, like, you've turned it into a really powerful way to help other people.
Yeah.
Like, knowing, like, having gone through what you gone through what you went through.
Yeah.
You know, rather than staying in the, oh my God, if only I'd known, what might I be doing with my life? You're like, oh, now I know, and now I can help other people.
Yeah.
How can I use this now to, like, move forward powerfully?
Yeah.
I think that's a really important piece is, yes, there's grief. Yes, there's anger. Accept that that happened and you can't change it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And allow yourself to, like, let go of the what ifs because you actually really don't know.
Yeah. And I also just think, like, being in the what if land just isn't useful. It generally just creates a lot of unnecessary suffering.
And we stay in what if to avoid grief and loss, right?
Yeah.
We stay in anger to avoid grief and loss. So that kind of comes back to our, when you're compassionate and you can allow yourself to feel the sadness and let it, then you can let it go.
Yeah, totally. One other thing I've got here that I wanted to mention is, like, red flags that I always look for, like, in my own language, my own, like, inner dialogue, and when I'm working with clients as well, is any shoulds. Like, anytime it's like, oh, I should have known that. I should have figured that out. I should be better with that. I should, you know, I should have known sooner. I should be on time. Like, I feel like that is such an invitation to be compassionate with yourself, because I should is just straight judgment.
Straight judgment. Like, shame. Should leads to shame.
Yeah. It leads to feeling like shit. You're shooting on yourself. You're shitting on yourself. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to offer that as, like, that is such an opportunity to drop into that curiosity and to practice the compassion that we've been, the self-compassion we've been talking about.
Yeah, and one really simple way people can start to do it is first become aware of that voice in your head. And if you write it out and you listen to it and you even say it out loud, like, you should have known better. What is wrong with you? You know, if we become aware of the sound of that inner violence, oftentimes writing it out and bringing it into our consciousness is, and then you can go, would you ever speak to someone you loved like that? Would you ever?
No way.
You never would.
No.
And if someone was speaking to you like that, would you allow them in your life?
Fuck no.
So there's some, like, there's some, I think, some boundary there too, to be like, well, then why would I let myself talk to myself that way? Like, it's painful.
Yeah.
Why would I let myself violate myself in that way?
Yeah.
So, right, I think the red flags, listen for those should thoughts. You know you're in lack of self-compassion when you're in that, when you're in judgment and you feel like there's nothing that you can do to change. You're just a terrible human. Guilt is a good one.
Yeah. Listen for those red flags, those shoulds. Yeah.
The shoulds.
Yeah.
And the emotions, that go with it.
And one of the most powerful activities, I actually learned this, the very first self-help book, if that's what we call it, that I ever read was Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. And oh my God, did it what? Like, it was incredible. I still, like, it's like my Bible, really. So she has this exercise in there, and she was the first person who drew my attention to how often I was saying should. And she has this exercise in the book where she has you write, I should, and then you finish all of the possible ways that you could finish that sentence. Like, you write as many different things as you can on a page. So like, for example, I should, you know, be better organized. I should lose weight. I should be a better friend. I should be good with money, whatever, like all the things. And then she gets you to go through and you cross out the should and you write, if I wanted to, I could. If I wanted to, I could lose weight. If I wanted to, I could be a better friend. If I wanted to. And I know for some people, and I'm careful when I hand out this activity because it can create like extra pressure, or I feel bad because, you know, if I really wanted to, I would be doing it. Like I'm very aware of that. But also for me at the time and the place and where I was at, like it kind of gave me my power back. Like, yeah, actually, if I wanted to, I could do that, but I haven't been doing that because I don't actually want to. I felt like I had to or I should, but I don't really care about that. Like, I don't really want to focus on it. Like, so, as I said, I'm mindful of like handing out that activity to people.
Yeah.
I did find it like incredibly useful to cross out the should and say, you know, if I wanted to, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. You know,
like taking that ownership.
Yeah. So
there's not something innately wrong with you. You're actually just choosing. Yeah. And you could choose different if you want it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, those That's shoulds. Powerful. Yeah, like the shoulds.
Watch out for the shoulds.
Are just a red flag. Like
red flag.
Yeah, red flag that shit. Yeah. Anything else that you feel like we have missed that we should definitely cover before we tell everyone where to come and hang out with you?
I don't think so. I just think reiterating that it is one of the most powerful things you can do for yourself and therefore the people around you. Because the more you learn compassion for yourself, the more compassion you will practice towards others too.
I would agree with that. Like the more compassionate I have been with myself, the less judgmental I am towards other people. Like I used to be a very judgmental person, and the more self-compassion I have, the less judgmental I am towards others by far.
Curiosity is your pathway out of judgment into compassion. Get curious.
Yeah.
Ask the questions.
Yeah. 100%. I love that. Thank you so much. Tell all the people where to come and find you and hang out with you.
So come find me. I spend a lot of time on Instagram. I'm at Bex Stark, BEX_STARK. And I'm on Facebook as Rebecca Stark Thornberry. And those are the two places I hang out. I also have a website, RebeccaStarkCoaching.com. And I work one-on-one with clients, helping them develop this kind of loving, compassionate, curious relationship with themselves.
Yeah.
So that they can actually make some powerful transformations in their life.
Yeah. And I just want to like, again, tell everyone that you are like, literally that is your superpower. Like you are so good at doing that. Like when you have coached me, it has been literally life-changing. And I definitely want to encourage everyone to go and find you and hang out with you because you have taught me so much and I'm very grateful for you. So thank you for being the first podcast guest on Navigating Adult ADHD. Yay.
I love it. And thank you for the work that you do. And it's just so exciting to watch you take over the world like this.
Thank you, friend. Hey, friend. I know exactly what it's like to feel frustrated and confused with your ADHD. And to wish that you could better understand what the hell is going on in your brain. And that's exactly why I created my coaching program, Thriving with ADHD. Inside Thriving with ADHD, you learn a step-by-step process to set and finally achieve your goals, to understand yourself and your ADHD. It's where you learn to feel better and manage your emotions, and create systems and processes that work for you with your ADHD brain. This is designed for you to learn how to thrive with ADHD so you can create the life that you were meant to live. Visit zenajones.com/ADHD to learn more and book a consultation.